like you.
8:14 now, good morning. Well, the Summit County Council met yesterday, and on the phone with a recap, County Council Member Kim Carson. Good morning, Kim.
Good morning, Leslie.
Hey, first, any reaction, if you have any, to the film studio settlement? I mean, I think that this, you sat on the Summit County Council kind of after this had been put into Park City's hands.
It was afterwards. But as a community member, it's there, so I would like to see it thrive. But we'll see.
Okay.
Wish them the best.
Also, on the DACA resolution approved yesterday, have you heard from Hispanic community members on this or any involvement perhaps with Dreamers during your school board days?
You know, during my school board days, we definitely were interested in a state, one of the House bills that would have provided the ability for students to get some scholarship funding when they first entered college at a state university. And that we were actively involved in and were successful in getting that passed. It's always been a concern, and I think I'm hoping that there will be quick movement towards DREAM Act 17, I guess is what it's going to be called. So, and I appreciate Orrin Hatch's work on that.
So the county council, though, felt it was important to make a statement on this?
We do feel like it's important to make a community statement. And, you know, last week the school board passed their Safe Schools resolution in support of DACA and our immigrant students. And I know that the city's very interested. We had a lot of conversations. Neon Worrell organized some of those conversations and discussion, and we talked to the city of Boulder about it while on city tour. So, you know, I think it's important not only to send a message to our elected officials at all levels, but also to our community members that we're here and we're standing beside them.
And in terms of, so to avoid having another generation of Dreambos in another 20, 25 years, I mean, anybody starting to talk about some kind of solution?
At the county level, we haven't. But I think this is one where there could be some bipartisan, I would really like to, I'm hopeful that there will be some bipartisan discussion starting to take place.
All right, looking at the rest of the agenda, the facilities master plan, this was just basically a review of the city facilities with the exception of a couple of buildings. So any plans for additional security at the county courthouse or at the Richmond Services Building? Of course, we remember the incident late last year when the courthouse was closed down when there was a fugitive loose in the neighborhood.
Yes. You know, one of the main goals of the review was security and safety. You know, we were looking at trying to improve customer service, make sure we were allocating space in relationship to the functions of the various departments and looking at their needs, and then also to minimize the need for any new construction in the future. And, you know, it's tough to minimize the need for any new construction, but, you know, are we able to reduce that possibility? And I was really impressed with what they brought forward. And in the area of security, one problem with the courthouse is it's had two additions, so usually things don't quite flow as well when you have multiple additions on a building. And then what the original purpose was, you know, it was really our courts and justice center when it was first built. And there's a lot of hallways and people, it's easy for people to enter the building. There's multiple entryways. And then with these long hallways, with the doors to various departments going off of those, you don't really see the people that are coming and going, which is a security concern. So they brought forward some really interesting proposals to bring those, like once you enter a department through a door, then there's a little reception area where you have desks, but bringing those reception desks right to the edge of the hallway with, you know, some type of a glass divider, and then people can see the flow. And I think also wayfinding from a citizen standpoint is tough in that building. You walk in and it's, you know, there is a lot of signage up, but it's still tough to you have to walk upstairs and around a lot of corners to find the department you're going to. So I think having those different departments right up at the hallway will make it easier for our citizens to find where they're going.
Yeah, so any suggestions, though, to close three of those four access doors?
Yes, that's one of the recommendations is we will have the traditional front entryway door opened to the public, and then the side ADA access door open to the public, and then the others will be some type of a secure keyed entry for employees only.
All right. As a member of the health board, any reaction to the mental health awareness plan presented yesterday?
Well, you know, we didn't actually spend a lot of time on the strategic plan itself. It's quite a long document, and I've spent quite a bit of time with it, just being a part of one of the committees on with the Summit County Wellness Alliance. But we will be each reviewing that and then having another discussion more specifically on the plan itself and then adoption of that plan. We got some good information yesterday on what really led up to the plan. And, of course, it was the tragic loss of two of our young men in the community that really got things started, and also an editorial by Ed and Lynn Rutan on the challenges that they've had with finding access to appropriate care for their son who has mental health issues. And so we talked about the importance of having this be a collaborative effort where we bring, you know, this isn't a Summit County Health Department or Summit County problem. It's not a Park City problem or a Park City School District problem. We have all three school districts in the county actively participating in these discussions and on committees. We have, of course, Park City Municipal Corporation and representatives from municipalities in both the North Summit and South Summit area. We have IHC, Valley Behavioral Health, U of U, other private providers and provider organizations and nonprofits. It's really remarkable that all these people are coming together around this issue, and I am confident that it'll result in being able to get, you know, top priority is access, increasing access, and the capacity of those providers.
Yeah,
so
and
go ahead.
I was going to say, and that's what the survey showed that they had done was a real need for additional psychiatric services. So,
yes.
do we need to leave that to the private industry then?
No, it's going to take. There'll be services that will be provided from every one of those organizations or governmental entities that I mentioned, and I believe I left off that list, which. What is the Park City Community Foundation? Ollie Wilder has been a wonderful leader in helping us, you know, organize this process, along with our hire, Aaron Newman, who's working with the health department with Rich Bola in coordinating this strategic plan and initiative.
So do we have any sense how we're doing with opioid addiction in Summit County?
No, we haven't received a specific report on opioid addiction. We know it's a problem, and again, we want to make sure that the resources are there. Another area that's a real concern is suicide prevention. Aaron had a really sobering statistic that from survey results, it's estimated that almost 25% of Summit County students have considered suicide in the past 12 months, and a large percentage of those are actually currently getting, you know, help, or at least they're talking to somebody, but there's a large portion that aren't. So one of the initiatives is through the school districts and some of the nonprofits and communities that care, which is now our local community leader for communities that care is Mary Krista Smith. But we'd like to get people trained in QPR, which is the question, persuade, refer process. To really, if you think somebody's considering suicide, having the tools to be able to have a conversation with them and move them to the next step of getting help.
All
and
right.
I believe South Summit School District uses a program called SOS, which is, you know, a similar concept.
All right, moving on. You attended the city road tour to Boulder and Vail and Grand Junction and Black Hawk. Any reactions to that?
It's like a fire hose. You get so many great ideas, and then it's, okay, how do you translate that once you get back? City of Boulder, I thought it was interesting that our strategic initiatives are almost identical, and one that's different is their fifth one is homelessness. And if we swapped that one out for our strategic effect regarding the Summit County Mental Wellness Alliance and their work, you know, we would have identical strategic effects. So we're all interested in the same things and working towards accomplishing a lot of the same things as far as affordable housing, sustainability. And but they're doing an arts cultural plan, again, very similar initiative to our initiative in Summit County. They're a bit ahead of us in the process. The county does countywide comprehensive plan that involves each of the municipalities. And I thought that was really interesting, and it reminded me of the work we're doing now in Eastern Summit County with our changes to the development code that we're considering. We're going to be, you know, we're meeting with each of the municipalities on the east side to determine what are you interested as far as your annexation declaration area. What type of zoning do you have within that area? What would be do you feel would be the ideal for the county to do right outside of your annexation area? Because, you know, our ideal would be to have those that want to develop to annex into the municipality so they can get those municipal services, because we're not in the business of providing those.
So we're talking with Summit County Council Member Kim Carson. Was it productive, you think, that we had the entire county council and most of the Park City Council, except for Cindy Matsumoto and Mayor Jack Thomas, who are leaving at the end of the year?
You know, I do. I feel like that's one of the, to me, most important benefits of City Tour is, you know, I don't spend as much time talking to my counterparts on the trip. We may have you know, dinners together or side conversations about what they learned and what they think would be interesting to discuss with the rest of council. But having that opportunity just in a casual setting to talk to the other elected officials that are on the trip from Park City, and I know occasionally we've had a few electeds from other municipalities or the school district, which I think would be great to encourage them to come in the future. But then to spend time with the other community members and nonprofit leaders, you just can't really replace the opportunity to spend that time.
Let's see. Also, during county council comments, you and your colleagues yesterday discussed the wall. This isn't President Trump's wall, but the possible wall at Jeremy Ranch. So what's the status on that?
You know, the ball is in UDOT's court right now. It's my understanding that they are still going to be sending letters out that have those that are directly affected vote on whether they want the wall or not. And that is a requirement for them to be able to get federal funding for the project. We have talked to them about the need for the additional lane, and there is a serious safety issue involved with that area. Our hope is that if a wall goes forward, that we can have conversations with them on ways to mitigate the impact of it, whether it's through berming, planting, having it broken up in areas. It's a long, tall wall. Roger had mentioned that he saw a wall in the Boulder area that seemed to be as tall and that there were some softening effects to it. And so I think I'm going to have my son that lives over in Boulder drive around and take some pictures of the sound walls for me. so we can have an idea of what's been done in other areas.
You had also mentioned that you have heard people who are objecting to the new climbing lane on I-80. Why?
Well, I think there's been, what I have heard is people questioning if it was really needed, because the addition of that climbing lane is one of the things that's triggering the sound wall review. And it's not that that climbing wall is going to increase the noise. I mean, it will increase it, but it's not the thing that's putting it over the threshold. It's already over the threshold because of increased traffic on I-80. But this requires them to address it. There's some that question, have just said, is this really needed? But UDOT has quite a bit of data that definitely supports the need for an additional climbing lane there.
Okay. Anything else you wanted to mention?
No, I just want to thank Miles Radiman for organizing another great city tour and for his assistant, Minda Stockdale, and all the work that she did. It's kind of like herding cats, but it's definitely worthwhile. And let's just hope for the best with DACA.
Okay. Kim Carson is a member of the Summit County Council. Thanks for your time.
Thank you.
It's 8:32 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. Joining me now in the studio, Chairman of the Park City Planning Commission, Adam Strong. Good morning.
Good morning.
So just three items on the agenda last night, but another late evening. With regard to the Treasure project, the applicant did not ask for a decision. I think we had thought that it was going to come in September, but they did ask for two meetings in October and another two meetings in November. This is still being negotiated. Whose decision is it? Yours or the planning staff's? Or
it's the applicant's, and nothing's being negotiated as far as I know in terms of coming to some type of resolution or whatever. And I mean, I think they've asked for the additional meetings because they still have more evidence and more things to say to us. So we will wait and see.
So, again, but is it your decision to decide that we're going to add Treasure on both meetings, or
it is our decision, yeah, in terms of our agenda. It's our decision, you know, and for what it's worth, I'd rather pack them in and get it done. But that's a factor of staff time and resources, so we'll let Bruce and his competent staff figure that out.
Well, and I had kind of gotten the sense that maybe there were some negotiations going on, but you say no?
Not to my knowledge. I don't know.
Public comment didn't get started until after 9. Several people who wanted to address the commission. You had asked Think Attorney Nikki DeForge if the group planned on making their own recommendations or if they were just going to make comments. Did she give you a response?
Well, I asked her if she was going to comment on – well, let me back up. We're getting to the point now where staff is starting to propose potential conditions on the project. And my question to her was whether Think intended to comment on those conditions and or provide a list of their own conditions that they suggest. She said she would comment, that Think would comment on the conditions that staff was putting forward, but was unlikely to supply her own conditions because their position is that the application violates the MPD and that's the end of the analysis. No conditions could warrant approving the project.
Hmm. The applicant's engineer, Gary Horton, and you talked about sidewalks and pedestrian safety on Lowell and Empire. So this is kind of interesting. The staff is recommending sidewalks not be put in. Treasurer is saying they want to. So what's the deal?
Yeah, it really presents a real conundrum. You know, it's kind of a philosophical debate. The city's position is, you know, you put in sidewalks, you widen the road, you just create higher speeds of cars. And I get that. That's, you know, I think backed up, as Alfred Knott said, by lots of studies. On the other hand, the solution that the city has put forward is, well, narrow the street and keep the pedestrians in the road, because when you intermingle pedestrians with traffic, everybody slows down, and that's the goal. Obviously, that raises big safety concerns. Treasure's position is we would put in the sidewalks, and we would, you know, maybe or maybe not widen the road, depending, because that addresses the safety concerns. You know, that's a catch-22, and I see both sides of it. I think what's going to have to happen is that the facts on the ground are going to rule. The sidewalks in many places cannot go in, not only for the reasons that city engineer Cassell or Castle put out, but also because if you put the sidewalks in, you shorten the driveways become unworkable, and they violate the 15% gradient requirement under the land management code. That is, they become so short and so steep that they violate the code. And, you know, more importantly, people just park in them on very steep surfaces and block the sidewalk, and that creates an unworkable situation also, which we see throughout Old Town. So, you know, I think where I'm not sure where I come down on it yet. I think there's got to be some substantial conditions of approval which limit the size of the project. Because if the idea is that we're going to have pedestrians on the street, we need to decrease the amount of pedestrians on that street as much as possible. And I think that means decrease the number of rooms in the project.
These are both hills. I mean, not that steep, but steep enough. And a car without snow tires can certainly slip and slide coming down, trying to brake to get out of the way, or, you know, for a pedestrian. I guess I'm just, it just seems to me that you want to separate cars and people in ski boots.
Yeah, I'm with you. I am still waiting to be convinced by that argument from city staff. I just don't see it as a functional traffic calming measure to have pedestrians, many of whom have no idea where they're going because they're from LA or New York or where, what have you, and put them out on a street, particularly when construction traffic, who are trying to make deadlines in large dump trucks fully loaded, are going down snowy streets. That to me just does not seem right in my head.
What about a one-way option, you know, up one street and down another? We've certainly got the horseshoe there that connect the two.
Yeah, that is another difficult catch-22. The problem with the one-way solution, well, option, is that it increases vehicle miles traveled and trips. Because, for instance, if you make it one-way moving south to north, going up Lowell and down Empire, somebody from the Marriott Mountainside or the Lowell PCMR team building has to go all the way up Mountainside, or excuse me, all the way up Lowell, and around the horseshoe, and then back down Empire, and increases pollution, increases vehicle miles traveled, and that's a real problem. And both sides recognize that as fact, that it increases vehicle miles traveled. But on the other hand, it also increases the safety, at least according to Treasure's traffic consultant. So, you know, we're going to need to make some real tough decisions here about how we balance safety against the needs of ingress and egress. And I think that's most likely going to come in the form of some type of conditions that decrease the volume of both cars and people to the project.
Hmm. Apparently, they've told you that they have decreased the impact by nearly 2 acres. Is that just of disturbed development?
Yeah, they've put out some refinements. They had an original plan drawing referred to as 17.1, and they've refined that, and now it's known as 17.2, and it decreases the square footage from a little over 1 million to a little under 1 million. I think the amount that it decreased was about 68,000 square feet. With that comes some reduced excavation and some other changes to the project. Those changes, while I think the commission was unanimous on this, those changes, while a move in the right direction, are not nearly substantial enough, at least in our analysis at this point, to allay the concerns and the impacts that we've seen.
During public comment, resident Michael Kelly brought up asking the commission if they had looked at the ability of the current sewer and water system. He didn't think that the current design would meet capacity with all of these rooms. Will it?
Well, it, you know, I believe that in the reconstruction of Empire last year, they increased the capacity of the sewer lines. I may be wrong about that. Matt Castle will know. But the capacity of the sewer lines and the infrastructure is something that was envisioned in the MPD back in the early 80s. And so to the extent that, you know, the capacity doesn't fit the project now, the MPD envisions that that capacity will be increased either at the cost of the applicant or the cost of the city, or most likely some cooperation between both of them. But that obviously was thought of back then, and it's not an answer. It's not a way to stop the project to say the sewer line won't fit. The MPD wouldn't allow that.
And resident John Staffschult brought up the cabriolet. He says he doesn't think it's good for the neighborhood and rather pointless. Isn't this the way, though, that people are going to be getting up and down to the project?
Yeah, you know, that's his opinion. I think other people have differences of opinion. Public comment is where those opinions come out. So, you know, he's welcome to voice those. And, you know, who knows whether it is or it isn't.
All right. You're back to Treasure on October 11th. Anything that you expect to happen between now and then?
No, their request for additional meetings was somewhat of a surprise to me, so I'm curious to hear what we're going to go over. I know staff needs more time, but I had no idea the applicant needed more time. Last I heard from them, they were gunning for a decision here, so I don't know what to expect going forward.
Okay, anything else you think that's...
No, I just, I would like to thank the public for sticking around so late last night. I mean, we were up till 10, and the public stuck that out after very long presentations and lots of questions from commissioners, and that's just admirable, so thank you.
Okay, Adam, thank you for your time. That's the chair of the Park City Planning Commission, Adam Strong. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. KPCW News Time now, 8:44. Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher in the studio with me now with an update on the week's activities. Jenny Dearson, special events manager. Good morning.
Good morning.
Let's see. This weekend, starting on Saturday, we've got another trail series, hopefully in the not too muddy.
Yep. So Saturday morning, we have the Park City Trail Series. It's completing the season with a 13-mile half marathon. The event is scheduled at Round Valley starting at 8 o'clock in the morning. We will keep an eye on the trails out there with the rain expected tomorrow. Events should be cleared out around noon, and if you want to hit the trails afterwards, it is supposed to be a nice weekend. And if you're interested in learning more about the impacts, you can go to pctrailseries.com to see the course there and the trail impacts for that event.
Okay, and Autumn Aloft also returns.
Autumn Aloft returns this weekend. It's one of my favorite events. I'm excited to see it. Public events are scheduled on Saturday and Sunday mornings at the North 40 Field behind the school district. We have about 24 balloons taking off starting at 7:45 in the morning. Please carpool to the event. Parking is available at the school district on Kearns. We do anticipate that the parking will fill early. First bus to the high school arrives from Old Town Transit Center at 7:30 a.m. You can also take your bike or walk to the event. While there is no bike valet specifically, there are plenty of places to take your bike and lock it up during the event. And then also on Saturday night, we have the Balloon Glow that's back on Main Street between 4th and 5th Street. Parking and traffic in that area, so from 4th to 5th Street, will be removed from 5 o'clock to 10 o'clock p.m. Parking for the Balloon Glow is at Park City High School with free transit to Main Street and the Old Town Transit Center. We do expect on Saturday evening that parking in China Bridge will fill during that event. So if you're driving, please help us to reduce traffic and congestion and, of course, carpool and take the bus. I do. If you're interested in learning out more about the schedule, you can just go to autumnaloft.com to find out more there.
Okay. And the final Silly Sunday Market.
Yep. It is the final week of the Silly Market. The market will be held until 6 p.m. this weekend. Free parking for the market is at the high school with free transit to Main Street. So on Sunday morning, you can go enjoy Autumn Aloft and then take the bus or ride your bike to enjoy brunch on Main Street and enjoy the silly market. Please remember to bring your bag if you're coming to the market. And then they also will have a pet adoption this week at the market as well if you're looking for a new furry friend. And then also want to remind you, Tour de Suds is back at City Park for the 7 mile climb. Please dress in costume. The race takes off at 10 o'clock in the morning, and you can pre-register through Friday. That's a great event to kind of celebrate the end of summer and the beginning of fall. More information on that one can be found at mountaintrailsfoundation.org.
Okay. Looks like September's still full of some events coming up.
So we have quite a few trail events coming up with the North Face Endurance Challenge. That's at Park City Resort next week. And then the Utah High School Cross Country Invitational at Round Valley. And also the Utah High School Mountain Bike Race coming up in October. Please keep your eyes out for impacts posted on the trails. We will also continue to work with Mountain Trails Foundation. And then also wanted to remind people, while it is my last week to give the summer updates, we will continue our text alert system throughout the fall. So you can always learn more by texting PC Events to 888-777. And then I also wanted to mention our next SEAC meeting is scheduled on September 20th. That's next Wednesday at Park City Library at noon. We will be reviewing the past summer event season as a whole, and we'd love for people to attend. And if you can't attend, we would highly encourage you to submit feedback to seac@parkcity.org. That feedback goes to the entire committee as well as staff, and it's important for us to get the community's feedback.
Okay, what is SEAC working on at this point?
So right now we are, you know, again, we have been really debriefing all of the major summer events individually. And I think we're looking in this next meeting to kind of have a take on the entire summer. So what did it feel like in town from June through August? And looking to the future, we're looking forward to doing a community survey and really getting some more feedback from the community and working to balance the event calendar.
Okay. Jenny, thanks. We'll see you in October.
See you soon.
It's Jenny Dearson with Park City Municipal. KPCW News Time now, 8:51. Good morning. Well, the date is set, Saturday, October 28th at Stein Erickson Lodge in the studio with details about Jan's winter welcome from the Youth Sports Alliance Board member Shannon Barkey along with UOP Program Manager Matt Toler. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So, Shannon, do you want to just start with the details? I mean, we know it's Saturday, October 28th, and there's a cost and tickets are on sale.
Yeah, so we only have a handful of tickets left, so everybody has to get out there because you do not want to be left out of this party and this fundraiser. So I think we still have a handful at $300, and if you're feeling extra snazzy, you can still snag a table from $3,000 to $5,000. So it's still out there, ready to go. Put on your party pants.
Okay, and this is a major, the major fundraiser for Youth Sports Alliance.
Absolutely, yeah. This is, you know, a time when we raise the majority of our money for the season and able to give it back to the teams that we support, and then, you know, also able to offer grants and give back to those kids that are trying to make it to the next level or just enter into the world of sports, which is really fun. So we kind of fundraise for it all at this event.
What are we up in terms of numbers of kids participating in the programs under the umbrella?
Gosh, this is where we need Emily here to tell you all those specifics. But I mean, it's well over 1,000 children that we are affecting, all the way from elementary school in our Get Out and Play session to the Activate program and then through our competitive teams.
And Matt, this course was an event started by your late father-in-law, Jan Peterson, some 37 years ago. Talk to me just a little bit about the history of that, because with the recent passing of Tori Pillinger, he had kind of a dear friend of your wife's, he had kind of taken Tori under his wing. She had an amazing talent and a single mom and just no money.
Yeah, I think, you know, this Jan's Winter Welcome is going to be bittersweet because, you know, Tori was the original person that why Jan started it. You know, she had drive, she had character, and she needed somebody to help her get to, you know, her goals. And Jan, you know, put together a little fundraiser and to support her and some of the other skiers at that time. And you know, here we are 37 years later, in raising a vast amount of money and, you know, supporting so many kids. And, you know, for me to be part of this conversation, you know, as a coach, as a sport person, you know, Tori was what we all believe that we want our kids to become from sport. You know, she was somebody who had drive, who had character, who when she came to town, she visited everybody. You know, and Jan's Werner Welcome is about all the kids. You know, Tori was a very talented athlete, you know, and many of the kids are. But we want, you know, the reason that Jan's Werner Welcome is for those kids to participate in sport and to come out with the type of character and person she was. So, you know, we look at the people that go there to support the Olympians and that, but it's really about supporting kids and getting them involved in sport. And she is really, to me, kind of the poster child of what we want kids to be, the characteristics we want them to come out of being in a sport program.
Well, I know it was just a year ago when we had a tribute for Jan himself. Yeah. Is there something planned similarly for Tori?
Yeah, I think there's some things behind the scenes. And again, I think people really need to remember, you know, where this started. You know, at 37 years later, it's easy to forget about why we started this. And there's going to be a celebration of her life. And hopefully, you know, people start to recognize what kind of person and why we're supporting these kids, you know, not just to send kids to the Olympics, but to allow them to participate in sport and become good, you know, good people and somebody that affects people's lives.
Yeah. And I don't know if you know the story, but I remember hearing a story. I think it was at that first Jan's Winter Welcome. The few auction items that you had, John McMillian basically bought them all. And then said, okay, they're all up for auction again.
Yeah, I heard that story. And again, that's the idea that we're all here to support the youth of our community however we need to do that. And yeah, that's a great little story. And you know, it'll be a great celebration. It'll be bittersweet for sure. But it's something we need to always remember.
Okay. Again, this has got a big impact on our youth athletes just beginning and those that are certainly well achieved. Anything else you want to add about
the
event?
You know, we always have a theme, and this year our theme and our big prize, you know, the opportunity drawing that you can win at $50 tickets, which are always available and we're still selling. So please do that. But the big trip this year is to Barcelona and to watch the Soccer Clásico between Barcelona and Real Madrid. So it is going to be amazing, super fun. Any soccer fans out there, this is like something that you do not, absolutely 100% do not want to miss.
Okay. And you can purchase those online?
Yep, at ysaparkcity.org. Or any kid that has a YSA jacket, they should have tickets with them and should be able to sell you. So, yeah.
Okay. Anything else?
Yep.
All right. Matt, Shannon,
thanks
for coming in.
Thank you.